Has he?
Take a ride.
Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I'm your conductor, Joseph Ward, and as always, you know, ride with me is my homies, Mr. Patrick Irvin and Mr. Jamie Bashan. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And also make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to make sure you hear the playbacks of your favorite shows and just to keep up with us, you know what I'm saying? And also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain and subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play Music. Pat, Jamie, what it look like?
What it do? What's good?
Man, look, it's Tuesday.
Good, I'm back home feeling good. What's happening, Pat?
One time for the 850.
Ah, man. You are back in TT town.
You talking about you ain't recognize the city no more?
Only thing I recognize, and it not in a good way, was the South Side, because it's gotten progressively worse. But well, they built up everything around the South Side. Like, you go to Monroe, yeah. Cascade Park out there, man.
Yeah.
They got new restaurants. I come to the South Side, it's just like, shit.
Yeah.
Well, you can't even clear trees on the sidewalk. It's like, oh my God.
Man, goodness. Look, I'm going out to pick up trash tomorrow, man. Like, I hate, it's everywhere. But that's what I was going to say. I was like, it changed, but it ain't changed. Because everything that you know, it ain't changed.
Changed, yeah.
You know, if it's on the white side of town, crossing railroad tracks, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So. Oh, man. They kind of neglected this side of town. But it's glad to be back. I'm glad to be back in the city.
That's what's
meeting up
to
everybody.
And this get this good Florida racism. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. some of that Florida-cism.
Hey, man, you know, it ain't nothing like good Florida racism. It's different from that Texas racism. They crazy out there.
They got a tang to it in Texas.
I mean, you know, Will, you might get your face ate off, and you know they, but you know Texas is a little, they real crazy.
Motherfuckers still eating bath salts out here, man.
Man, they, you know they ain't stopped down there in South Florida, man. They ain't stopped doing that, man. They eating bath salts.
I thought we got over bath salts. God damn, I ain't know that was back around. Might have to get me some.
Nah, I walked out the house, saw some dudes smoking Molly yesterday. Like, I'm like, damn.
Can you smoke Molly?
Yes. They smoke it like crack.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
I know, right?
Hold on, come out. I thought you, like, that's MD, what, inmate, and whatever. I don't know the damn drug term. You can smoke that shit?
Yep.
Well, you can, well, hell, these people, they'll smoke any goddamn thing. Motherfucker, yeah. Damn.
You know, drug addicts and drug dealers, you know, them people are very creative.
They going to do whatever they need to make sure you can have full access to their product.
The term street pharmacist fits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fuckers will smoke anything. God damn.
Hey, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, man. Let me. I don't know.
We way off topic.
It's funny, though. Hey, man. What is it about crack that make crackheads kind of like live longer? Like, they look bad, but they live for a long time. And, like, and especially if they ride bicycles, like the crackheads who ride bicycles, they're almost superhuman. Like, they're almost X-Men.
It's that cardio, man. Them jokers running everywhere, exercising. They got perfect cardio to be a crackhead, man. You got to run from a lot of people to be a crackhead. So you got to have good cardio. That's,
man,
like, that's a workout right there.
I'm talking about they could be a big bicycle, a little bicycle, a medium bicycle, your child's bicycle, a tricycle. They'll ride it across town and back.
I mean, you got to look at the diet, though. Cardio, they get a low-carb diet. They just trying to eat whatever so they don't die. They just
and crack.
Minimum supply of water. That crack is the main ingredient. So if you look at that diet, that's a pretty lucrative business idea. If you think about it, I can see why crack is so big.
They got kryptonite in or something.
You know, not to get too sciencey, but they did discover a gene that activates when you're starving that increases your longevity.
For real?
Yeah. That's real.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have read that. I have read that. That's why a lot of spiritual practices they encourage long bouts of
fasting.
Yeah.
You know, the counter to that is who the fuck want to be hungry all the time?
Yeah. God didn't put all these chickens and Popeyes on the corners for me to go hungry.
Oh, the fruits and the veggies.
He wouldn't have did me that. Yeah, he wouldn't have did that to me.
Yo, crazy man. Hey man, so what's our topic for today, gentlemen? What we going over today? What's up, Pat? Busting people over the head with?
Well, I figure we got a whole bunch of things to talk about, and Jamie had a brilliant idea that we just gonna run with. The PAC's codes of conduct.
Right.
Were released to the public recently, to much widespread critical acclaim. If I do it for myself.
There you go.
Check your Instagram, suckers.
So it has been getting a lot of attention of late in the various small and unorganized pro-black circles. But I figured we could go over that. Like I said, Jamie's brilliant idea. We could go over that. And in the midst of going over that, it gives us the opportunity to talk about all of the other things that are on our subject to be discussed, if you will.
Right,
you have.
Right. Because we got something to get off our chest.
So the Black Codes of Social Engineering, short name is BCOS.
Because what?
Because we love you.
There you go.
What movie was that from?
I don't know.
It was a TV show.
I don't know.
Family Matters. Roll with it. Don't say no.
Yeah. Robert Townsend was in it.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of, we always talk about social engineering and its impact on the development of our community, which is real, right?
Right.
So, it's like everything. We choose to talk about these subjects as if they are inherently bad, not realizing that they're inherently neutral. The purpose they're used for makes them good or bad. So we could use social engineering to improve our community just like it's been used to destroy it. So that's kind of what the codes are centered around. So the very first, Joe, you the host, you go through them.
Hey, man. Okay. DJ 123 in the house. Hey, Pat.
What?
Look here, okay? I was just trying to be nice with you, okay?
Because
my mama said, my mama taught me to share, okay?
Don't be nice, don't share.
All right, so the first rule is the Vegas rule, and then I'm going to read it, and then, you know, we're going to go a little further in depth in the Vegas rule and give you examples of how to apply. So the Vegas rule is what goes on in the black community, Stephen A. Smith, is discussed and resolved within the black community, Stephen A. Smith. The nation is constantly looking for reasons to vilify us and keep us from working together. This is often done by misrepresenting cultural differences and inserting negative narratives that are then used to attack the community socially through various media outlets. But this can also come in the form of using words of one member This can come in the form of using the words of one member of a subset of a community to attack an entire but different subset of the community, oftentimes creating a situation that is blown out of proportion before the community itself has a chance to address the issue. These situations are often held in places as a reminder long after the issue has been resolved, with the resolution never being mentioned, thus creating tension. Look, Stephen A. Smith, just for you, especially for you. We ain't got to go all outside airing all our business outside. Because I guarantee you, Stephen A. Smith, I'm going to keep saying his name because he need to get it. Well, he wouldn't want nobody airing his personal business. You know.
And it's funny that you mention that. And you know, with the Vegas rule, like, and this is what Stephen A. Smith is bad about. He'll trash something about the black community. Absolutely go in on it. And I tell you another thing, Skip.
We need to hear that, Skip. Like, shut up.
I am appalled. I am agitated. He'll go completely in on black people. But when it comes to something in the white community, he's ho-hum. He's all calm. He's not going off. And like, I think he was it the Gordon kid that got suspended from the Browns for weed. He went in on this dude. Black people need to da-da-da-da this. But you think he's going to do that when a Roethlisberger, one of these white quarterbacks or something, get caught up in something? No, he don't go that hard. Because he knows if he goes that hard, he might not have a job come Monday.
But he
feels the need. He can go in on us and trash us. And even though he knows a large percent of his viewers are white people, you know, just completely bashing it. But it, to me, if he did it equally, then, yeah, I could maybe give him not even a pass. But he can't even do it equally. He just does it towards the black community, and that's what pisses me off about that dude. And he says some dumbass stuff anyway. But
and
the Vegas rule in general, he needs to go ahead and let that go. He needs to cut it. That's what he needs to do. But my last thing about the Vegas rule, I think that's important. And I think a lot of black people, especially when they get on national TV and these media outlets, there's certain things we need to know our audience and who we're conveying this information to. And because a lot of they don't need to hear this. They're not going to do anything with it but use it negatively towards us. They're going to point at that person, well, this person said this about you, and they're going to be use that to verify how they're feeling and their negative connotations about you and stereotyping you. So we got, especially when they get on national outlets and stuff like that, people really need to stay on that Vegas code. And everybody got to know our business. They ain't going to help us resolve it, so they don't need to know about it.
And you know, another interesting point to that is, because Jamie hit on everything, all of the pertinent points, but another sidebar point is the fact that when they get on TV and they talk about everything that's wrong with the black community, and they basically give white people, you know, a checklist of all the things to attack us with, they never talk about the things that we're doing to fix those problems. So you constantly hear about black-on-black crime, but you never hear about all of the organizations out there fighting black-on-black crime. Why you constantly hear about, all of these other negative things going on in the community, like Fuck O'Reilly is always talking about the single-parent household in the black community if he discovered it. But, you know, nobody's ever talking about all of the different programs and things that we have in place that can combat the effects of those issues. Nobody is also talking about the fact that the CDC released a report in 2013 that said black men are more likely to be involved with their children than any other man in America.
Right.
Both when in the home and when outside of the home. So they never talk about the totality of the picture. All they do is talk about the bad shit and make it out like if you're going to air out the dirty laundry, air out the clean shit too, and air out the washing machine so that they know we're trying to wash the dirty laundry.
Man, look.
And a key part to that, like, I'll use everybody, like, especially in this last presidential election, Chicago, they made Chicago sound like it was goddamn Baghdad, you know what I'm saying? But here's the thing. To all that crime, there's plenty of people that are out there on the street trying to, you know, stop that crime and all that good stuff. So that's the part people don't focus on.
Right. I mean, it's not going to push the ratings for the media. And you know, these people, they sell out. So that's why they're pushing that, because they straight sell out. So they're gonna be the ones who step to the plate to try to air all our dirty laundry. And you know, black people, look, we're using Stephen A. Smith as an example and others as an example. But look, black people, look, we developed this code of conduct because we don't have one, and we need a code of conduct to live by. And this Vegas rule is for our own protection. We're not. This Vegas rule isn't to sweep stuff under the rug. It's not sweep stuff under the rug rule. It's a rule that's saying we handle our business, but everybody ain't got to know what we're doing when we're handling our business. It ain't our business to say, hey, Mr. White Man, see, I took care of everything. We don't need to do all that. What happens in this house stays in this house.
And that code of conduct, just the general title, every other you know, subpopulation in America, and especially, you know, the white Americans, a lot of people think they don't have codes of conduct. Yeah, they do. You can use this election as a perfect example. Them people, everybody put Trump, they stayed on code. Yeah, they came, shook hands with Judith and Nene, but they stayed on code. They knew what they had to do. So the Asians, the Arabs, all these different, you know, races, people think this is something that, oh, we should know. Everybody else has it. We need to practice these type of things too. And this isn't the first example of a code of conduct. I think Frances Cress Welsing, she had a code of conduct. I think Marcus Garvey had developed tenets and stuff like that for the black community. So there's plenty. Our elders have been reciting this, and hell, we're trying to, you know, bring this back up to the forefront to, you know, help the next generation and our generation for that part. If we get on these codes of conduct, we can make a little something happen, man.
And stick to them, right? That's, we can build with good codes of conduct. All right, so the next one is the good faith rule. And the good faith rule is communicate in good faith to identify issues and problem solve. Far too often in our communities with each other, we are expecting negativity, usually in the form of not believing someone will do what they say they will. This is problematic on a multitude of levels, the biggest of which is that it stops us from even attempting to work together. When we interact with each other, we need to be interacting from a positive position of faith and trust. It's not only through this form of communication we'll be able to hear each other clearly enough to identify problems and solve them. So communicate in good faith to identify issues and problem solve. All right, shoot.
Bang, bang.
Ooh, I'll let Pat go it down. Because I don't know, when you say the communication part within the community, one thing that came up to my head personally is, like, how we got the no snitching rule in black communities. So to throw that out there, do you guys feel that's effective or not?
Well, it depends on how we're using this no snitching thinking and stuff like that, because a lot of times I think we use it to our detriment. Because let's really be real. It ain't really no real no snitching rule. Like people say, but I don't really. We all seen First 48, so.
Oh yeah.
And I only ever seen one person ever on First 48, and this dude was like he waited his whole life to get his chance to be the realest ever, and he wasn't going to miss his opportunity. That was just that one dude. But the other 100,000 people I've seen, and when we know, period, we saw the American Gangster, all the stuff, there is no real no snitching rule. People snitch when the pressure gets on, but what we do is we won't speak up and give the identity of known terrorists in our communities when we need to. And stuff is backwards. And to me with this, that's one of the reasons why this would exist, because we're not communicating in a way that uplifts us. Like if we have people who messing up our hoods, we got to speak up against this person. We got to come together and get this person right, get them out of our community, because we can't just be allowing that. Oh man, that's just Jimmy. Nah, Jimmy can't do that.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I was getting, because when you said communication, I don't know, we can get back on target, but That's saying there's no honor amongst thieves. And first of all, I ain't a damn thief, so I ain't honoring shit you doing in the first damn place. If I see you commit a crime, like, I'm sorry, you call me a snitch, you call me not a real N-word, all that kind of nonsense, I don't give a damn. If you committing crimes, you're bringing down first of all, you're bringing down my property value, and I don't appreciate that shit. But you're destroying the community. You know, you're doing something that negatively impacts the community. So whether you want to call somebody a snitch, now, if you know this dude's breaking and entering in his own damn community, turn that simple motherfucker in so people don't have to keep replacing their damn stuff. You're not honoring. You're not, like, this code of the street. We need to eliminate that stupid shit and actually communicate in good faith, like this code of conduct. I mean, this code of communication talks about. Like, I shouldn't, if I tell this dude, hey, man, you know, you're going to do right, this, this, that, and the other, and he going out just breaking in people's houses, like, and selling it back to the same damn community. How fucking dumb are we? Stop that shit. You know, communicate. Like, I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent. Go ahead, Pat.
That's an angle I hadn't even thought about. But I do the whole no snitching thing comes from a bunch of people that want to be gangsters, because that was a mob rule. That was a mob code of conduct back in the day. You know, don't talk to the police. If you talk to the police, you know, the mob is going to kill you before you get a chance to talk to them again. So, you know, we kind of embrace that criminal code of conduct largely from the shit we got off of TVs and movies and shit like Scarface and all these other places, because we know that they were singing too. That's how come mob bosses always end up in jail. So it's real interesting where we get these codes from and how we utilize them. I agree completely that a lot of the codes of conduct on the street right now are very detrimental. And the whole stop snitching thing, look, even when I was in high school, I was never cool with that. Even when I lived in the Meadows, and motherfuckers would be doing all kinds of crazy shit all day long up in the back of that hill, I was very clear. If you do something around me and the cops ask me about it, I'm telling. Because you shouldn't be doing that in the first fucking place. I don't give a fuck if you call me a snitch. So you know what? I got a reputation and people knew, oh, they go, Pat, don't do shit. Good. That's great. Because I don't want to tell on you. But I will. But I don't want to.
That's exactly. And it, to me, it's just, I don't know. When I heard that, I just thought of that cold, how we don't like to turn each other. Like, I'm not saying, like, if somebody's criminal, period. If they're criminal, doing something violent, taken away from the community, they need to turn their ass in. You need to communicate some type of way, period.
Right.
I'm not saying, we just need to go around and just, you know, like, oh, you know,
right.
Stuff we're doing, we don't have to. But if it's criminal, turn that shit in. How you think we're going to better the community if we're not?
You're not going to improve the community by just allowing people to run rampant doing crazy stuff. I mean, if it's criminal, either have some system already in place in the community to deal with that, or you got to turn it in.
Right. And we definitely not advocating calling the cops because somebody's smoking weed on the corner.
Oh, yeah. No. Nothing like that. Yeah.
But if somebody shoots somebody in the face, you need to call somebody
right.
on that. If somebody out this motherfucker kneecapping people with a shotgun, you know, you might need to call somebody and let them know, hey, it's a dude outside kneecapping motherfuckers. Y'all need to get out here.
Yeah, Jimmy Lee can't just be out there just getting it in like that. We got to stop Jimmy Lee.
Perfect example. Like, I went and partaked in some Crown Royal. I went to go with ABC Liquor on the South Side. I know that sounds terrible, but fuck you, I'm an adult.
No,
anyway,
no
adult. And it's a guy outside. He's just, he's clearly high on something. He's just laying on the ground begging people for change. And I'm like, hey, you need to move that. Like, that's just, like, it's already bad enough we're on the South Side, but we don't need to see that. And it's like, I don't feel bad for doing that because he needs to get the hell up and go, you know, do something, you know, figure this out. We shouldn't have people laying in the middle of the street begging for changes. No, I'm not saying I ain't telling her to call the cops or anything like that. Of course, I don't want to see the brother in jail. Brother just need to go, you know, wherever his house is and get drunk and high there. And like you said, Pat, if somebody doing something like smoking weed, I'm not going to turn you in. But if you out there selling yayo or goddamn, what were
you talking about?
You getting
turned in.
Yeah, you get turned in. You smoke crack around me, I'm turning your crackhead ass in. I'm sorry. Or you selling the crack. I won't even turn into crackhead. The crackhead don't know no better. Crackhead needs help. But if you slanging the crack, I'm turning you in all day. All day in the shade.
I'm a hard drug dealer. Easy. To me, you don't care. Like, we got another one down for that. You a Sambo if that, at that point, if you're selling crack and heroin and hardcore
you don't care about your community.
Inside your own community, then you don't care about your community. You don't get the respect and the protection of that community. Fuck no. I'm calling the cops on you, and I don't feel bad if they beat your ass on the way in. I don't.
Well, from a communication standpoint, we got that backwards. We want to protect the goddamn, the people, like, oh, he's bringing, like, they think of it as, like, this dude's going to, you know, make it rain turkeys and shit. No, all you're going to do is get some 22s on a bullshit-ass Chevy, get locked up, and it's going to go.
I'm glad you said that, and I just want to make this last point about that, because I call this the Lenino Brown effect. Like you say, motherfucker come around and give out Christmas toys and turkeys, and everybody make them a hero. So 2 days out of 365, you give back to the community, but the other days, you just tearing it down. Like, nah, dog, nah. Get your ass out of the community. And I'm calling the popo on your ass.
And that's the disconnect people don't make, though, because really what this brother is doing are, you know, it's pretty rare that black people become that large-scale drug dealers, but the ones that do, they typically move out of the black community. So basically, they're acting similar to a church in terms of transferring wealth from the community into another community. They're taking $20 a rock at a time from the community, and then they're moving. They're going into a wealthy white neighborhood and spending all their money there. So, you know, you're really, again, transferring wealth out of your community. But I wanted to say, and that's a good point. That's an angle I hadn't thought about, is that communication as well. But I think another point or another side, especially the side that's hit on with the descriptor, is the fact that as black people, we don't believe, like, if Jamie were to, like, if we were going to interact or engage in a conversation about what Jamie's going to do in the future, and Jamie were to tell me, well, you know, I'm going to start a business doing this, this, and this, chances are that the majority of the people that Jamie talked to about it don't believe he's going to do it. And so when he asks for help, or when they have an opportunity to offer help, they don't offer it because they don't see it as being a worthwhile investment. They don't see it as going anywhere. And so those types of interactions in and of themselves get in the way of our building, because now you hear people saying, man, that nigga ain't going to do shit. Man, that dude ain't going to do shit. Man, he ain't about shit. Man, he's just running his mouth. And we'll think about how those types of interactions spread out, become a part of the culture, become a part of what we genuinely believe about other people, and prevent us from getting together to build anything of any substance.
Right. All right, so our next rule is our conservation of energy rule, and this is something that we really need to take heed to. So make an effort to get involved with projects that generate collective statements regarding any issues that negatively impact black communities. But check this part out. We spend far too much time duplicating work and making duplicate statements. Before you get involved with any project or in making any statement, see if someone else has already fully conveyed or established what you're looking for. If they have, then divert your energy to something else. Two fish restaurants side by side will eventually run each other out of business. Two car washes, two whatever. So, conservation of energy rule. Look around, see who else is doing what, and make your decision before you just jump out there and do something. Because you could potentially cancel yourself and other people out who are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, in my opinion, that was pretty self-explanatory and simple. I mean, if you want to do something, look and see who else is doing it. And if they're doing it and they're doing it well, then join up with them or go do something else. But there ain't no need of you doing. There ain't no need of you starting a summer school program, right next door to another summer school program that, and y'all are offering the same services from the same perspective. You're not doing nothing but stealing from the community, and now a community that maybe could support one program is now kind of being driven to support in two. They don't have the resources to support two, so both of them go out. You know, or not even just a summer school program. We could talk about a school. You know, it could be a school, a private school in a community that services 50 kids, which isn't a lot of kids, but it's barely enough for them to maintain what they're trying to maintain. And you say, you know what? We need a school. And I'm going to open the school because I think we need a school. And you open the school right next to the private school. So now they got 25 students because you've taken the other 25. 25 is not enough for neither one of y'all to stay in business. Now the community has no schools. So it's just making sure that we're being effective and efficient with what we're doing. I mean,
well, I see it a lot, like here in town. I see it a lot with businesses and the rent, car washes, churches, and barbecue spots. I'm so tired of seeing them. And they I swear, man, they all line up like at least half a mile, like one road over in the south side, Lake Bradford. There is
five different
at least three, four car washes on Lake Bradford. There's one up on Gamble. So let put it like this. If we talk about a whole mile radius, we probably got 15 car washes, 50 churches, and about 30 barbecue spots within a mile radius.
And, oh, man, like, Pat said something that was important, man, like about the private school, that analogy. If, let's say those two people, they just combine their resources. If they combine it, they could probably build something that could probably house 100 kids, mm-hmm. let alone just the 50 they serving. Now right. they got enough kids, they got more access to resources, so on and so forth.
Right.
But I think a lot of it goes back to how we were culturally brought up. Back, you know, I studied, you know, a lot of the African cultures that still exist to the day. They have, you know, that village mentality. Like, it takes mm-hmm. the village, that mentality. And, you know, if it's food, you know what, I'm growing enough for the community, we can trade, we can do the barter system, do like that. Now we just see everybody as competition. Mm-hmm. Black people, we see them as competition. I'm competing against you. And maybe that was instilled in us from the slavery days, you know, but it's still carrying with us today because everybody thinks they're in competition with the next person. Like, all right, I'm going to open up my car wash. When it's actually, hey, man, you want to? We can do a car wash. We can take this whole acre lot, build something a lot bigger than these two rinky-dink little things we got going, and we can probably triple our business if we combine our efforts and resources. But we don't think like that, and I think it goes back to how we raise each other. We don't see another black person as somebody, as a resource, somebody I can work with. We see that as my competition. Like, in order for me to come up in life, I got to step on this guy's head or that guy's head versus, hey, we can all eat, as they say in the rap game. We can all eat at the table. But we just kind of got to, you know, sit down, think about it, get over the ego. Ego is a big-ass thing when it comes to conserving resources. Like, nah, I'm going to do my own. I'm going to be big town. And it ain't about you. If you're doing a service for the community, think about put the community first, put the people first, and put your raggedy-ass ego second.
See,
and
one
more note, then I'll go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, when people say they're doing it for the community, they lying. They're doing it for community acknowledgement, not for community empowerment.
The ego. The ego, that's it. And what you, the church thing, that was hilarious. Here's my thing, man. We got a church on every corner, damn near. And, like, you throw a stone and you hit a church.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't shit changing in the communities, okay? Nothing's changing. So let's just do something. Let's just, well, nah, that's a bad. I was about to say build a mega church, but
put
the money and put it on the north side. My thing is, a lot of these little small churches, to me, it's just like little. I don't know. I can't give any good analogies without pissing everybody off.
Well, put it like this. Like. Let's talk. We just talked about the conservation of energy. I mean, that's what we're talking about—the conservation of energy, right? So, if each church specializes in something different, right? So, if this church, we specialize in teaching people how to read. Everybody in this church is dedicated to improving reading literacy. This church over here is dedicated to improving writing literacy. This church is dedicated to math. This church is dedicated to science. This church is dedicated to survival. This church, if everybody plays a piece of the puzzle, then having all these different churches wouldn't be a bad thing, because every church plays a specific purpose. But all of them do the same thing. Yeah, you might be Cogent, you might be the Episcopalian, you might be AME, you might be Baptist, but all y'all are really full of shit at the end of the day, because you really ain't doing nothing for the communities.
Not a damn thing. But that's how they get their tax-free stuff, by saying they're community service. Therefore, they don't have to pay taxes. When a lot of it, I'm going to be quite honestly, these pastors, yeah, they come out here, they hand out some biscuits every now and again, but they don't stay on the south side.
Right.
They don't stay in these communities in which they serve. They don't send their kids to these same schools from which they serve. They kids that, like, going to a goddamn school across town, going to some of the, well, they're funding, you church members are funding their kids' college education at some school that probably ain't even the HBCU. That's like, so they're taking this money and taking it out of the community. But, again, that's the religious aspect. You know, I know people can touch you about that. That 10% you're giving isn't coming back to your community. Yeah, your church might be building more buildings and having extra Sunday cookouts, but how is the community doing? And as I went through the South Side the last 2 days, I can tell you every church that's on the South Side is doing a shitty job.
Hey, man, look. Now, go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to say, you guys both made good points. Joe, your point to the fact that the community is not, the church is a great example of where conservation of energy is needed, because like you pointed out, a lot of churches, their bread and butter is their social outreach programs in terms of getting their members to stay there. You know, like their members feel like they're doing something for the community. But when you got four churches on the corner and all four of them are offering separate backpack drives and separate tutoring programs, and separate
that don't make no sense. It
kind of cuts down on the resources. Whereas, like what Jamie said earlier, if they would just come together, they could provide greater access and greater quality resources to the community as a whole. But Jamie made another good point when he talked about tithes, and it's a little off subject, but I'm gonna go on my tangent anyway. If you give your 10% to the church, and the church does not give that back to the community, you have not tithed. I'm gonna say that again. If you give 10% of your money to the church, and the church does not give back to the community, you have still stolen from God. The purpose of the tithe. When community members started tithing, shall we say, because originally the tithe was only for a priest. But when community members started tithing, the objective was to give back. And the best way to give back to the poor back then was to give it to the church. That was the most efficient way to do it. So that was the whole backdrop behind giving 10% of your dollars to the church. Otherwise, you give 10% of your time or your dollars directly to the impoverished, the people in need, as it were. So, again, if you give that money to the church and they don't do anything with it, that's just like giving your 10% to the goddamn corner store for a fourth of Hennessy. It's the same, you know what I mean, I'm thinking about something else. For a fifth. It's the same difference. It's the same thing.
You're right.
You guys have not tithed at all, and I really wish they would teach the even from a biblical standpoint, what it means to tithe, where it came from, with all of the context and history behind it that's needed for you to really understand what you're doing when you tithe. If you give your money to a mega pastor and all he do is buy a $10 million jet, you have not tithed. I'm sorry.
And here's my thing with tithes, everybody know it was the fruits of your labor, that 10%. Now churches, you know, post all that BS, they just equate that to money. Your time can be tithed. Your time, your effort. I mentor. That's
you
me
gave
t-
what you had.
Giving back. Yeah, it's not necessarily you giving money. If you just, I got this young man, I got a few young men back in Texas that I sit there and talk to at least on a weekly basis, helping them, guiding them, giving all the knowledge that was given unto me, helping them out whatever way I can. That doesn't necessarily mean, hey, here's $10, go buy some. No. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about these relationships you got, this, that, and the other. That's me tithing back to the next generation. So a lot of people just hear tithe. I hate that because people, oh, you don't pay tithes and you're robbing God. Da, 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 da. Shut the fuck up. If I go and talk to these people and I give them good wisdom, stuff that my elders have given to me, and I pass that down, that's the whole point of that, to pass that information out, to pass down those resources. So don't think tithing is just you giving damn $10 off $100. Like, cut that shit out, man. Right. Your time is more important, honestly, to your community than you just giving $10 in the collection pay and not knowing where it's going. At the end of the day, throw your throw it up in the air. If God takes it, then he needed it.
Mix me with that, and I'm going to give you a harsh history lesson. That's all I'm going to say.
Here comes Joe. Here comes Joe.
I keep my peace, but if you ask me what I think, and then when I give you my answer, you mad because I gave you my answer, and I didn't reinforce what you was thinking. So that's all I say. So the next rule is the positive acknowledgement rule. And so this is make every effort to acknowledge and or at minimum greet members of your community when in their presence. And if you're from the South, you should already be doing this.
Yeah.
But greeting people is the first step in building a relationship with them in our current situation. And we need to build as many relationships inside the community as we can. The deep ramifications of simply acknowledging someone's presence cannot be overstated. You could prevent someone from committing suicide, meet a lifelong friend, find a business partner, find a job for someone else you know, all because you simply nodded your head or say hello. And that showed the truth, because around here, if you don't speak, people are going to say you ain't got good manners and your parents didn't raise you right. But
I'm going to be honest, man. I'm going to be perfectly honest. This new generation didn't get that message. As I've been out, like, this lady, like, she was younger than me, and I was calling her ma'am because she was, you know, I was purchasing a product. I'm calling her ma'am, and it threw her off. You know, I was respectful, this, that, and the other. And like, I mean, she looked at me weird, and she was just like, you know, you don't have to call me ma'am. I'm like, yes, we're in a, this is a professional setting. I'm going to call you ma'am. Like, I told her, like, I will call you that. You ain't got no choice. And it's just like, and like, even when I was walking, and I just, like, my wife's like, do you know that guy? And I'm like, no, but I greet people. If I look at you and you look at me, hey, what's happening? Hey, what's this? You know, I'm going to greet you. And I think a lot of the young people, I don't know, I'm going to just walk with a mean mug or some shit. Like, that's so corny. Say hey to people. God damn. That's all I'm going to say. Say fucking hey and sit the fuck down. Oh, mean ass.
Really, you silly, simple motherfucker. How hard are you really trying to be that you ain't got time to acknowledge the presence of somebody else? And, you know, it's kind of a shame that we even got to make that into a code of conduct, because that used to just be good home training. You know, Southern hospitality, whatever you want to call it. I do believe it was only Southern, because my first time going to New York, dudes were just shooting units at me like crazy. I thought everybody wanted to fight me. But,
hey, yo, B.
It's simple good manners. Like, you know, it's, everybody knows it feels good to have your presence acknowledged. You know, and you never know how that could really impact somebody. You know, somebody, I have been having the worst days of my life. A complete stranger would be like, hey, man, it's all right. What's up, man? It'll be okay. And that should have turned my day around. And I'm not going to sit here and lie. That shit has happened like 3 or 4 times in the past month.
And so, I will say this, though. Oh, go ahead, Pat. You ain't finished. My bad. I ain't trying to Kanye West you. Ladies, it's the ladies. If I say hey to you, how you doing, I'm not trying to hit on you. I'm just saying hey to your raggedy ass. Like, don't assume I want your raggedy ass, that I'm being nice. Like, I had that happen. Like, she kind of, like, brushed me off. I'm like, hey, I'm just saying hey. Like, I'm married. I got 2 kids. You couldn't open my car door in real life, but I'm just being nice. Like, so ladies, if a guy says something, hey, just say hey back, be polite. But if I say, hey, what's going on, then maybe I'm in furthering something. But nobody wants your ass all the time. Just say hey and chill out. That's my little friend.
That's a good point, though, because I've had that discussion with numerous women who don't like, and they often say, well, I can tell the difference between a man who's just speaking to be polite and a man that wants something. And in the back of my mind, I'm always like, no, you can't. Because
no, you can't.
1 out of every 5 women that I say hey to thinks that I want something from her. Look, I'm married with kids as well. And I ain't met a woman yet in the streets that made me think twice about tipping out on my wife. Haven't met a woman yet. So, if I'm, like you said, you can't just assume that because a dude takes the time out to hold the door open, I say, how you doing, ma'am? I say, you know, even in my case, because I'm good for, if I see you walking around with a stink-ass face, smile, it'll be okay. I'm good for that. That don't mean that I'm trying to assert my male dominance and force you to obey my commands to smile and exert my control over your facial structure. No. You walking around looking like you're having a bad day, so it'll be okay. And then I keep
Yeah, greeting people, we definitely as a community got it. Like, here in the South, you know, hey, I could sit on my porch right now, and if somebody robbed, but they ain't got to know me. They going to honk the horn, I'm going to throw my hand up. But, like, when I was in California, man, I see, you know, people like, hey, what's happening? It's just like, yo, just, you know, just acknowledge me. Give me the, my thing is, I'm going to give you a head nod, whether I know you or not. What's that? That's my thing. What's happening? But, you know, like, it's not weird. Like, the people make it seem weird. They just stare at you. Like, stop being fucking weird. Say hey back, and we just keep moving. Shit. Like, stop making it so damn weird. Yeah, like this guy wants something from me. If I say hi, then I have to pay him. Like, fucking relax.
Man, look, I nod and keep it moving. How you doing? How you doing?
Yeah, exactly. What's that?
Sometimes you walk away. How you doing? Kind of catch him off guard. Oh, my God. Yeah, how you doing? Keep it moving. Like, nah, I don't like you. I don't like you like that. I'm just letting you know. It's all good. It's all good. All right, so the next rule is It's levels to this rule. That's the name of the rule. It's the levels to this rule. Recognize levels and address them accordingly when it comes to credibility in research and expertise of field. Understand that just because you know something doesn't mean you know everything. Just because someone doesn't know as much as you doesn't mean they don't know anything. Everyone is on a journey when it comes to dealing with community members. We need to be willing to help everyone we come in contact with. It's levels to this.
The long term of that form of that rule is there's levels to this shit.
There you go. Shit.
But basically, okay. this goes out to, and I'm going to call you out because I don't care. This goes out to all of the Hotepers and the Hebrew Israelites. Stop thinking that you know more than everybody you come in contact with, or even worse, that people that you come in contact with don't have anything to teach you. Everybody has something of value to impart to somebody else.
Especially when you're historically inaccurate.
It's simple, right? Like, you don't know everything. And there isn't a person out there that doesn't know anything. Even babies know something. They might not know how to communicate it, but they know something. So treat people with respect, man. Treat people with the respect that they're due. Definitely treat them with the respect they're due for the level they're on. But, you know, you can acknowledge that you might know a little bit more in a specific area than somebody else without lording it over them or acting like you're the king of their world or whatever the case might be. If you find yourself in that situation, acknowledge it and be willing to help that person get where you are.
Right.
My thing to that is kind of two-part. Number one, if it's levels to it, you got to know, because I was bad at this. When you talk to people, like, it's usually, damn, I hate to say it, usually religion. Like, you know, some people, they'll argue, I hate to say it, but, like, I had a buddy. He's arguing me tooth and nail. And I'm like, no, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just telling you what I've learned, what I've read. You know what I'm saying? He keeps reciting one source. I'm giving him multiple authors, multiple books. And I'm just like, yo, I'm not here to argue with you, but I'm letting you know, like, I'm not saying I know more or I know the universe better than you. I'm just saying, based on what I read, this is what it is. These are actual historical facts. These things can be proven this way and other. So when it comes to that levels of stuff, you got to also understand that maybe you're not on the level you need to be, and you need to be pulling some coattails to get there. Because a lot of people think, all right, I know this. I know this in my heart. What you know might not be the truth, all right? So understand that when new facts present themselves, you got to be able to analyze that stuff, redo whatever the fuck going on in your mind, and accept the truth for what it is. And I think a lot of people, because they've been raised in tradition, it's hard for them to accept facts. But you got to understand, it's levels to this shit. You on an infant level, which I was at one point. I'm not saying I'm on goddamn Super Saiyan or no shit like that. But when I meet people that I can learn something from, I'm not in there disputing little small-ass shit. I'm just trying to pull their coattail, get whatever I can get out of them. That way I can use it to better myself. So it's useless to get all this shit if you don't use it for your own personal growth and development.
See,
all the whole peppers and black – first of all, the term black Israelite is just dumb as fuck to me. And every time I hear these guys speak, I'm sorry. I know it's levels to this shit, and this might be disrespectful, going against the rule. But they are some of the dumbest motherfuckers I ever met in my life. The whole shit, if you say, hey, what if the Bible didn't exist? They have nothing else to fucking talk about. They don't.
Man, look.
Think about that. Think about it. If they did not have the first part of the Bible, and you say, you know what, tell me what you, without you, they have nothing to fucking talk about. They have nothing to present. Their whole argument doesn't even make fucking sense. Period.
Well, I mean, but see, that's the whole thing when we're talking about its levels to this, because what I try to get people to understand is, even if you've been studying this information for the last 20 years, you're still a baby. Like we have to remember, like, when we're really, really studying, like, the real spiritual masters, let's just take the character of Jesus, since Jesus is the central character that everybody knows, and we're talking about levels to this, right? So Jesus really didn't become a teacher to the magnitude that people revere him as until he was in his 30s. So we talk about from birth to 30, you know, he was preparing himself to to do the teaching and the miracles and stuff those 3 years, right? So, but it took 30 years for him to get prepared. The Egyptian initiates, when they went into the priesthood, they were in this priesthood for 40 to 47 years before you could graduate. Like the Moses himself, Moses didn't leave Egypt till he was 87 from a child. So we're talking about 87 years of knowledge. So when you come to me talk about, well, I've been studying for a year, I've studied for 5 years, and I'm ready to get out there and teach. No, you're not. I've been studying for like 14 years, 13, 14 years now, and I'm only in like third or fourth grade if you want to give it levels. I'm only in third or fourth grade, and I've been learning since 2003. So we have to stop with this. Oh well, I know this, and I know I'm trying to wake everybody up. Stop trying to wake people up. It's not your job to wake people up. It's your job to wake yourself up. I believe the universe put people in certain places at certain times to receive certain things, and that will allow that person to awaken when it's time for them to awaken. You can't force any information on anybody, and just because we're different doesn't mean I'm bad or I'm wrong. Like a lot of times people, like when you talk to people who are religious and you tell them you don't believe in their specific religion, next thing they follow up, so you don't believe in God? Like, damn, I didn't say that. But see, it's levels to this. You don't understand the level that I'm at. So just say that you don't understand instead of trying to be the supreme authority on things. There's always levels, and there's always going to be people who know more than you, and there's always going to be people who know less than you. Stop acting like you have all the answers.
And my thing is, when I get with people, and it's like I know I'm in those, you know, that empty stages of learning all this stuff, I just tell them what I read. Like I'm good. Like, oh, you okay? Anthony T. Browder, read this book. Read this, that, and other. This is where I got this from. He does a real, you know. I just give them the references. That way, if they go back and actually pick up a fucking book, they can read and interpret the information for themselves. I'm big on that because I try to talk to people and like, hey, this, that, and other. And I realize, you know what? It's like you said, you can't awake everybody. And we grown-ass people. I ain't trying to wake you up. Sleep the fuck if you want. That's your business. But I know the information and how I interpret it for myself and how I use it for my everyday life. And I'll share that information with you if you want to take the time, because me talking, having a 10-minute a 3-hour conversation isn't going to help you anything. It takes you going out and searching those things for yourself to have a true understanding. I think that's the part a lot of people struggle with, because nobody wants to, you know, take that time out to actually study. You know what? I'm believing in this religion. Let me actually study it beyond reading one book and using that only book as my reference for what I believe in. That's just dumb.
Well, you know, it's
a part. I want to say that's dumb. I apologize. Hold on, Pat. I apologize for saying that's dumb. That's just maybe not the best. Go ahead.
I think a part of this is, like you said earlier, Jamie, like everybody has to acknowledge their level. Everybody has to acknowledge where they are. Not where you think you are, not where you want to be, but where you truly are. I've been reading hardcore and studying hardcore for well over 10 years. My mom had me reading about this stuff in 8th and 9th grade. So it's been coming up on maybe about 20 years for me in terms of hardcore study, and I still run across something new every single day that I didn't know. You know, I still, like Joseph said, he's been doing it for 13 years, so by years standpoint, I got more years than Joe, but Joe teaches me something every single time we talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've learned something. I've learned things from you, Jamie, just in us being on this show and listening to you talk and presenting new perspectives. So, you know, it's one of them things where it's like you have to acknowledge where you are, really where you are, before you can even accept that other people have anything to teach you. And that's where we really have to get to the point of understanding how to do real-life self-assessments and how to really pinpoint where we are in the spectrum of things. One of my favorite quotes, I don't know who said it. It came to my head one day, but I'm sure somebody said it before me. So it's a quote from somebody. But one of my favorite quotes is, it's not the job of the enlightened to enlighten other people. It's the job of the enlightened, or the conscious, if you will, to show people the things that they are not conscious of. So if I show you this new way of thinking, this new way of being, this new perspective, that I've done my job by showing you what's out there. It's your job to dive into it. It's your job to. So it's not my job to wake you up. It's my, and I don't even like that term, because everybody sleep on something, you know. So there's no such thing as a motherfucker that's completely awake. You know, you might be 100% awake on Black Power, but then when I start talking genetics, you sleep. So there's no such thing as completely awake. But if I show you, if I can point to you somewhere, it's not my. Let me simplify. It's not my job to wake you up. It's my job to show you that you're sleeping. At that point, it becomes your job to wake up. And we can. I'm gonna leave it at that.
Also, I'm gonna leave it at this. Ain't no such thing as halfway woke. All right, because I know a lot of people that's talking about, oh, I'm acknowledged. Then next thing you know, you in church giving 10%. The next goddamn, like, shut the fuck up. No, you're not. Stop it. And yeah, that's a shot. So what? I'm just saying. I know a lot of people like that. That's they go around. You know, everybody wants to call themselves king, queens, this, that, and the other. I know the truth. I know thyself. This, that, and the other. And you still subscribing to things of white supremacy? Shut the fuck up. Like, stop it. That's my. Ain't no such thing.
There you go.
I full flex them. Yeah.
All right. So the next rule is the crack in the concrete rule. And shout out to Tupac. So when achieving certain levels of knowledge and or power to progress the movement, create an opportunity for others to use those same pathways already forged. Be like the flower growing in the concrete. It doesn't bash or look down on the other plants that fail to make it through the concrete. It weakens the concrete, creating space for more flowers to come through. Don't sit on your success and gloat over the community. Help other community members achieve what you have by helping them down the road you have blazed. Pew, pew. There you go.
Man, hey, I don't even want to go first because, well, fuck it, I got it. I talk first. I talk first. That should hit home with so many people. Because I know so many people that, even I say I'm guilty of this. Because it was one point, man, coming up the way I did in Tallahassee, it was like, man, my first thing was like, man, I got to get the hell up out of here. And I did. But I'm like, honestly, if I, you know, I still got my career that's taking me different places, I want to come back here once I retire, once I get that. Because this trip back home now has helped me show, like, man, I could really do some help around here. But a lot of people, and we got that mentality in us because the way we grew up is like, yo, get on, go do something, and get the hell out. Don't come back, don't look back. And I had that in my head for a long time until I realized, like, I ain't got to be ashamed of where I come from. Like, this is what made me. This is what pushed me to that level of success. So a lot of people, once they reach that level, they kind of look down like, nah, I ain't coming back. Y'all beneath me and stuff like that. When they're supposed to be, I'm going to feel like an idiot because I can't remember this. I did have a little bit of crown earlier, so that's my disclaimer. But he was talking about our talented 10. And our talented 10.
Carter G. Wilson. No, my bad. W.E.B. Du Bois. Souls of Black Folks.
That, so I could have said it. Yeah, you should have texted me that. So thanks for calling me out, Joe. Anyway, talking about our talented 10. All right? Our talented 10 are those people that go out to be doctors, that go out to be this. Instead of getting your practice in and opening up in some damn strip mall and suburbs in a white community, you're supposed to come back to these communities right here in the south sides of your city or wherever the case may be where you come from and open up there and provide a service to your people. But you had that mentality in your head to where I ain't coming back. Like, nah, and we just take it somewhere else. And I think once we break that mentality and realize we can be just as successful in that strip mall in suburban community versus you have opened up your own, you know, if you're a dentist, come back, open up a dentist office right here in your impoverished community. You're going to get service. And guess what? You'll be the only black person doing that type of thing. Guess what? Other people will follow suit. And I think when you reach that level of success, you owe it to where you came from. And a lot of people don't think they owe it to them. You owe it to where you came from to come back and do something. And that's why I mentor, because I know I can't be here to mentor young men and women right here in my local community. But wherever I'm at, I'm going to give whatever I can, because I owe it to the people who kicked me in my ass to help me become what I am today. Even though I got miles to go, I want to give back. So that's my thing, man. That hits home with me so bad, because I went through that mentality, and I know what it's like. And now that I see the other side of the coin, I was dead wrong. And you should take pride, and you should want to give back to, if you can't be in your local community, somewhere where they can actually use your help and use your talent, give that back to people. I'm done.
Hey, look, if you're not helping to improve your community, then you don't get it. Like, you have to reach back. You have to help others. I mean, others, like you said, other people have helped to get you to where you are. So, yeah, there's no such thing as a isolated successful person, or somebody who became successful who just haven't had anybody else in their life to help them out. That's not true. So, you have to give
back. One thing with that I saw was pretty cool, man. In DeSoto, Texas, Cat Von Miller, he graduated from DeSoto High School. He don't do like these, you know, he don't just do a little turkey giveaway, you know, write it off on his taxes. This dude actually will pop up at schools and just talk to kids. Shit like that, like just doing that, you know, seeing some, like, all these people that graduated from FAMU, Florida State, this, that, and the other. They're doctors, they're nurses, all that kind of stuff. I can ask a kid right here, right now, on the South Side, hey, you know a doctor? No. That's wrong. Because, you know, it's doctors that graduate right here from Rutgers High School. Y'all got to come back and show your face. It's not giving something. You don't even have to set up a business. But just come back, show your face, and tell your story. You can inspire somebody. And I think that's one piece a lot of people miss. Because, honestly, if you want somebody coming and talking to me and inspire me, Kevin Randolph, he's a reason why I'm a – you remember Coach K-Ran? Remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the reason I'm a Gator fan to this day. He inspired me to be a DM Gator fan because he played for UF. But he was one of my mentors coming up that used to, hey, Jamie, you being a dumbass. Like, he knew my mom, so he knew, well, you can get me in trouble real quick. But he's one of the people who helped me out, this, that, and other. So he didn't give me no money. He just kicked me in my ass when he needed to. And he was somebody that actually went out and had success in life. So just coming back and being seen is important as well. Go ahead, Pat. Do your thing.
No, I mean, I think you hit on a lot of, because that's something me and my wife were talking about just recently, of that mentality of never wanting to get out of Tallahassee, which I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think everybody needs to leave their hometown, especially if your hometown is Tallahassee. You need to see that the world is bigger. But the where the discussion came in was, I don't see anything wrong with going back, and I actually have a slight urge or desire to want to go back. And obviously that feeling is not reciprocated by my better half. But it's interesting because not just from a hometown standpoint, we talk about this from a community standpoint all the time. One of the biggest differences between little Susan or little Johnny that grew up in the white neighborhood and Malik or Keisha that grew up in the black neighborhood is that when those white kids want to know what it's like to be a doctor, they can knock on their neighbor's door. And when those black kids want to know what it's like to be a doctor, they got to go to the library and read a book written by some white person. And those are two huge differences in perspectives, because not only can little Susie or Johnny go knock on a door and get real live personal experience, but they're actually talking to a doctor. So the possibility of them becoming a doctor becomes that much more tangible. You know, it's like, oh, a doctor is not that big a deal no more. You know, my next door neighbor's a doctor, and the one on the other side is a lawyer, and the one on the other side is a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. It's not that big a deal. You know what I'm saying? And just having that mentality can take you wonders, where take you very, very far and do wonders for your life. Whereas you look at little Malik or little Keisha on the corner, in the black neighborhood, they want to do these things, but they feel like it's not attainable, like it's out of reach.
Yeah.
I ain't never spoke to no doctor before, and then you like Jamie said, you ask the question, Fuck you mean you ain't never spoke to no doctor before? A doctor grew up in the house you living in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a doctor grew up.
Hey,
next to you, a doctor graduated from your high school. A doctor went to your middle school. You know, so but these people don't come back. We largely think of success as getting as far away from black people as we can, so we take pride in being the only black people in the neighborhood. I'm the only black person living in this neighborhood. Fuck, you want a cookie? Why are you proud of that? You know what I'm saying?
But I'm nervous about that shit nowadays.
Hey, bro.
You should never want to be isolated around white folk like that.
Bro,
you're crazy if you do.
That's where I'm at. If it's not a... Like, I'm always going to... I don't care how rich, successful, or whatever I get... I'm going to always either be in the hood or close to a hood because I want to be close to my people. I feel uncomfortable when I walk outside and don't see black people. I get uncomfortable. So, but that's the difference. We need people understanding that, and that's at the core of the crack in the concrete rule. How can you show somebody how to navigate? How can you show your community how to navigate your path when you spend all of your life away from your community? You just because you're a doctor, if you're a doctor, you should feel like a success. Living in the white neighborhood should not add to that. Living in a black neighborhood should not take away from that. If I'm a doctor, I'm a doctor. I'm living in the hood. These people are malnourished, maltreated, getting hit with all kinds of toxic and poisonous substances from the air they breathe and the water they drink. They need you there anyway. Shit.
Yep.
Yeah, that's I can't spend all day on that, man, because I never understood the importance of it. And honestly, man, if I could have seen more, you know, black this or black that when I was coming up, it could have, who knows, it could have inspired me to do this, that, and the other. And when you do come back, don't make it a goddamn charity event. Don't look down on these kids, this, that, and the other. You know what I'm saying? Like, because a lot of them, they're going to see you got success, and a lot of these kids, they going to want a shortcut. Teach them, you know, we got to come back and show these kids no shortcut. Tell them what you did. Don't just make it seem like, oh, this is all I did was this, and I became a doctor. No, break these. Like, perfect example. I talk to kids in my line of work. I talk to kids every day. And a lot of these kids don't know, going back, it's levels to this. I had a young girl ask me, like, yo, I want to be a surgeon. So I'm sitting there, you know, spitting schools at her, like, these, you're going to have to go to this. You're going to have to get your pre-da-da-da. And she knew none of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, like, at the school this particular school, I know it's doctors that came. This school is nice-ass school. And I'm just like, nobody's coming back and telling these kids, hey, you got to go through this, that. And they just think it's easy because these people are so distant, they don't know the story of how they got to where they're going to. And when they do come back and maybe hear these stories, it just sounds like an instant success. Tell them about that hard-ass work. Inspire the shit out of these kids.
And you
that's my tangent.
To piggyback on that real quick before I shut up and let Joe do his thing. My wife is a RN. She got a bachelor's in nursing. And she talks to kids now about the process because a lot of kids and adults want to be nurses. And it's interesting because like what you said, Jamie, about wanting to be a surgeon, she didn't know that she thought once she got into South Florida as an undergrad, she was done. She didn't even know that you had to apply to a separate nursing school. She didn't know none of the process that it would take. She didn't know, like, when she was talking to some people and telling them about when she found out she had to take all these math courses. And then she found out she had to take all these science courses. She didn't know any of that was coming her way when she decided to be a nurse. And you sit back and you think about it now as an adult, and it's like, fuck you mean you ain't know? But as a child, you know, it becomes clear as a child, these kids don't know what it takes. They don't know the processes. And we as adults should feel bad that somebody could decide they want to be a nurse, apply to college, get in college, and then be shocked as shit that they have to apply to a nursing school. Like, that should be an L on the community.
An L on the community, L on schools, L on parents. It's just an L all around, man. Because when I tell you I meet young people that don't know, like, that don't know the processes and don't know that it's going to take work, and once they realize that, I feel like I'm popping a little, you know, popping a little dream bubble or something like that. And it's like, it ain't that you can't achieve it, but it's going to take a lot more effort than just saying, I hear all the time, I'm going to go to college. Well, did you take this test? Did you take that test? What's your GPA? Kid told me he's going to get a University of Texas. Asked him, was he in the top 7% of his class? He said, nah. He didn't even know where he stood percentage-wise. I had to tell him, I was like, dawg, you're not getting the University of Texas. You're just not. If you don't know you're in the top 7%, that school only takes the top 7%. I hate to tell him that. I felt like an asshole, but I had to be honest with the young man.
Yeah,
like,
being an asshole, you've been telling the truth.
Giving them that
but everybody, oh, he's going to get into wherever he wants. He just
no,
gotta
he's not.
Grow,
stop that. You can sit there and believe. Go in your room and believe as hard as you can and see what happens.
Like, we got to be honest with them.
Right. Be honest with these fucking kids. Stop that dumb shit, man. Stop telling this little dude who got now 5'1", 95 pounds, and he 18 years old, and he going to the NBA. No, he not.
Nope.
Stop it. Tell him to put the ball away and pick up a goddamn book.
All right. So, with that being said, we're going to give him the daily affirmation rule. All right. Speak out loud daily affirmations that value your importance to the black community and humanity. I am
somebody
sexy.
There you go.
Affirmations are powerful tools for self-actualization. What you think you are is what you will become, and far too many members of the community think they aren't worth what they truly are. Change the belief by speaking out loud every day that you are a powerful member of a powerful community. When you believe that you are powerful and that your people are powerful, you will be able to accomplish some truly amazing things. And after you believe, you take action. But first, I believe that I have the juice. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. This is, honestly, I take this one personal, too, because I got two little girls. My four-year-old, once my youngest one gets a little bit older, I'm going to teach her this, too. But every morning, every night, we do affirmations. I am beautiful. I am smart. I am confident. I'm a goddess. And I feel, because when she goes out into that world, when, you know, it's places where I can't protect it, where I can't control the environment, it's going to beat her down. She's going to be a black girl out here in this area or whatever the case may be. There's going to be self-esteem things, and all these things are going to be weighing on her. But if I can let her know that now, what she truly is, and she doesn't have to go somewhere else and go through broken relationships, all this, to discover that, you know how much power I'm giving her at that point? And I think a lot of parents, we don't know that. We got to speak life into these kids. And I'll be quite honest. I tell my daughter all the time, you are God. You know what? You control what you want to do in life. You are God. I'm not telling you she can go around and choose who dies and lives or anything like that. But why can't she be the God of what she surveys when she grows up? I'm the God of my world. You gentlemen are gods of what you do. You control your house. You govern this, that, and all. I ain't saying you over there just beating shit out the water, but not in the literal sense. But you get what I'm saying, right? I ain't talking crazy. Y'all understand what I'm saying, right?
Nope.
Yeah, we got you.
I've caught in flack for that. Like, why nobody? And it's like, no. Who's to say? She is God having a human-like experience. That's exactly how I explain God to my daughter. You are God having a human-like experience. He created you, right? Then you're a part of him. You can tap into the same abilities God has. Now, I'm not saying you're omnipresent, omniscience, and all that stuff, but you can tap into those same type of abilities. You can create your own reality. But it takes you believing that you can. So if I can instill that type of information there at an early age, I think that's going to do wonders for her once she starts coming out here in this real world. That's just something I believe in. So the affirmation parts, I do it for myself, and I definitely do it for my children. And I encourage anybody, especially you got these babies out here, they got to believe in themselves because this world is going to kick their ass. Everything they go out, when they go to these schools and all this kind of stuff, it's going to tell them they're negative. It's going to tell them they're not this, you're not good enough, especially some of these teachers. At these schools they go to, they gonna call them all types of things. Tell them I had a teacher tell me, like, you told me y'all wasn't gonna be shit when I grow up. I remember that. I ain't gonna say the teacher name because I ain't gonna call them out.
I'm finna say a name, sucker ass teacher.
I had teachers like, you gonna be locked up in jail, and I've literally had people tell me that shit. And if I was weak, I literally had teachers tell me that. And if I was weak and I didn't have the mentality I had, You know what I'm saying? I could have let that break me down. I could have went and been another statistic. So speaking that life into your children and not giving them limitations. And that's why I tell my daughter, you are God having me, because I don't want to give her any limitations. You can do it. If you want to be a doctor, goddamn it, you're going to be a doctor. You just got to go put in that work and you do it. Create right. your own reality. And I think that's important. That's just me. Right. If I sound crazy, go fuck yourself.
You crazy.
You sound yeah. straight. I mean, it's funny because I remember all of the negative things teachers said to me. Because I had a lot of teachers say crazy shit to me as well. But I remember all of the teachers, and there's really only two or three that said positive things to me as well. And those, like, the last one to do it was, believe it or not, Sam Carter, Coach Carter, in his science class. I forget what it was. It was something, it was a test, and cause he was always giving these life lessons instead of teaching science. which, at the time, you didn't understand how valuable it was. But as I've grown up, you know, I've really grown to understand how valuable what he was really doing was. And one of the things that he did, he gave us a test, and it was one of those follow directions type tests. And most of the class didn't follow the directions. And I followed the directions. And when he went off on his Kanye-style rant, which he was doing it long before Kanye, so, but when he went off on his rant to the class, he highlighted and gave a lot of positive affirmations to a lot of the students. He probably don't even remember doing it. But what he said to me at that stage in the ninth grade has, like, followed me for the rest of my life. Like, even to this day, it still follows me. So it's affirmations are extremely powerful. You know, one of the tricks is learning how to do it for yourself. So you're teaching your daughters that now. That's a wonderful thing because you're grooming them to believe about themselves whatever it is that they want to. But it's real powerful when it comes from other people, other sources. But one of the tricks, like I said, like I just said, is getting yourself to believe it. Because when you first mm-hmm. tell yourself that you're a powerful person, you're not going to believe yourself. Like, there's going to be a party that's, man, shut the fuck up. This is corny. This is stupid. You know what I'm saying? Like, all those are going to show up. But if you push through and keep doing it, the magic number is 30 days. If you push through and do it for about 30 days and you really start to believe it, you will really begin to see a legitimate change in your outlook and the way you think and in the things that are happening in your life. And for me, it started with what my mom was saying. It moved on. I had a fifth grade teacher, then I had an eighth grade teacher, then I had Coach Card in the ninth grade, and from there it's just kind of been me doing it for myself. But it's definitely powerful. It definitely works, and we definitely need to get more people onto it.
All right, so what we're going to do here is, because we kind of running out of time, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more. Well, 4 more rules. So we're gonna kind of speed through these rules, kind of touch.
Next week.
Oh, we can, but also I know what I wanna I want to touch on this before we go today, and I know we were planning on going through in the rule, but I feel like there's something we need to touch on today, and we can reinforce it next week. But I know Pat, you wanted to get some off your chest, and you and both of us about these. Address these memes that's going around that's giving false information that's kind of misleading people, and what's going on is very disrespectful. So this is to all the people who create these memes and the people who share these memes, the ones that we're not our grandparents or we're not our ancestors, we'll beat your ass. Stop all that. First of all, because you don't know your history. Nobody that's doing anything now is whooping nobody's ass. George Zimmerman is still in the streets. ain't nobody touched George Zimmerman. So don't you around here tell me that y'all around here that we ain't our grandparents, we'll put these hands on you. Stop lying. You ain't fighting nobody. We ain't standing up to nobody. We ain't having no kind of resistance to nobody. Name me the last time we actually had some kind of resistance against something. Name me last time we actually went toe-to-toe with some white group. Name me the last time we fought somebody other than ourselves. Name me the last time we had some kind of real stand. Stop that. It's very disrespectful and it's ignorant. You don't know what you're talking about, Pat.
I'm going to echo that point because, look, the simple truth of it is, whenever you say something like that, you're shitting on your ancestors. And that, you're shitting on your elders, not even your ancestors, because a lot of these people are still alive. Look, don't give me that they didn't fight back. The vast majority of black resistance was very much pro-self-defense. Meaning, if you fuck with me, I'm going to fuck you up. Like, if you look at how we love to talk about Black Wall Street, but nobody ever talks about how that situation even got escalated to that level. It got escalated to the point where white people were dropping bombs because the black people decided to show up at a courthouse and fight back and not let that young brother be falsely accused and lynched for allegedly doing what he did to that white girl in the elevator. That's how that got escalated to that point. You look at Wilmington, North Carolina. That city and the black community was largely torn down because the black community was not backing down to white pressure. So you look at the Deacons for Justice and Defense. These were men who, first off, they called themselves deacons, not because all of them were deacons in the church, but because they wanted a name that would soothe white minds and not make white people panic when they realize, you know, and start acting crazy. But that group armed themselves and made it their mission in life to protect the civil rights movement, the civil rights activists that were walking around talking about nonviolence. They were allowed to be nonviolent because there was a violent alternative protecting them. But nobody likes to talk about these things, and nobody does the research. That was even a chapter of the NAACP. I forget the president's name, but he eventually got ran out of the NAACP and out of the country. But that doesn't negate what he did. He offered weapons training to the black community at his chapter house. Like, self-defense has long been a regular part the black power movement. So for y'all to sit here and say, this ain't your grandparents' movement, we will kick your ass, one is ignorant, okay? It's extremely ignorant, it's extremely disrespectful, and on the other end, y'all don't even have the balls that they had, because y'all are largely doing what they did already. Black Lives Matter, they had signs for that in the 50s and 60s. Blocking highways, doing that. Sit-ins, die-ins, stand-ins, leaving school. They did all that shit, and they did it before y'all did it, and they did it in an environment where they could get shot in the face for doing it, okay? Y'all,
man, look, all
these little cute-ass protests. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
Nah, man, these little Thundercats be pissing me off, man. Because it's easy to do that behind the computer with a little meme. Let a motherfucker turn the fire hose on you, see what you do. That motherfucker put a dog on you, see what you do. Like, we ain't standing. No, but look, we're not standing up to anybody. It's a lie. George Zimmerman is still walking around.
And my thing is, you ain't your grandparents. Well, okay, well, you ain't, like you said, you ain't got the heart to go out there and protest and stand firm while they putting hoses on you, throwing dogs at you, sitting at a counter knowing these people finna attack you, this, that, and the other. Nobody got the heart of that. First of all, none of us even educated to that level to where we can actually do those types of things, even realize how we're under attack. So the for them to say, oh, I'm not my grandparents, that's just it's just stupid, and it just shows how they lack the information about what they're really talking about. Our grandparents weren't just sitting around just getting punched in the head because they liked it. They were actually out there doing stuff, putting themselves in the way of danger. Nobody's putting their way. We can't even pick up a goddamn book. You think people going to go out there and put themselves in the way of danger? Hell no.
I mean, but let's be honest. Motherfuckers talking about I would have fought back. Have you ever had a fire hose turned on you? How the fuck do you fight back against water coming at you at that level of pressure? There is no fighting back. All you do is fall down and try to get out the way. Like that. That's that fucking armchair quarterbacking type shit where you think you could do something different while you analyze the situation from the safety of your punk ass home. Stop that dumb shit, man. And first off, I met my grandparents. I don't know if y'all haven't met y'all's, but I've met my grandparents. There ain't no motherfucking pushovers. Like, they're not no cakewalks. Like, my mama still got horror stories of grandma and grandpa. Like, these people were, I don't know what kind of soft-ass, weak, scary-ass motherfuckers y'all think our grandparents were, but y'all grandparents must have been a separate race from mine, because my grandparents were punk-ass individuals.
But I will say this. I think something that's feeding into that is how we were taught about the civil rights era. How we're taught about it is this friendly, you know, MLK. They always use MLK. They think MLK was just this teddy bear. You could throw a rock at him. He would say, you know what, bless you, brother. Here's your rock back. Throw it again. That's not what that dude was doing. They didn't know MLK was plotting with guns and shit like that, because we don't read. We don't educate, and we're not informed on those type of things. So when they say this, it's truly from a standpoint where they don't know their history, and they just automatically assume a bunch of negative things about that. Well, not negative. The things we've been taught about the
right. But see, the thing that pissed me off about that is these be the same people who can give you the rundown when the new Jordans come out. They can tell you all the problems going on in the Kardashians' house. They know all of the trivial stuff. They know the BET Awards. They know about the little thing, the little concert they had in the White House, and all that other dumb shit that's going on. You know all that. You know all that, but you don't know your real history. You don't know the history of things that affect you right now. Like, white people are killing us off more now than they did then, and we talking about we not our ancestors, we'll fight back. Stop lying. We're being killed off more now than we were then, and we're not fighting back. We're finding excuses. All they do is send out some of the punk-ass preachers, and everybody calm down. And when people do riot, they riot in their own neighborhoods. You ain't fighting back.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Joe, the preacher's part. Hold on. I'm sorry, Pat. I'm sorry. The preacher's part. Think like that. Oh my God. Like, focus on that for a second. Whenever there's an issue, who's the first person? You know, you go back to church. Oh, turn the other cheek. Turn this. There's a lot of stuff in the Bible that isn't about just turning the other cheek and getting a fist in your ass. Like, seriously. Like. But that mentality, what you just said, a lot of people, when something happens, the George Zimmerman, they kill us, this and other, we just go to, like this election, we just go to church on Sunday, oh, just forgive, this, and other, and we completely let it dissolve. So, but our grandparents, they didn't do that. They just didn't go to church, give it all away, and just go to work on Monday. You look at the when they boycotted the buses, they went to work. They was like, okay, fine. Y'all want to do this? This is how we're going to get back at you. We're going to walk here. We're going to do this. We're going to boycott this. So, yeah, we aren't our grandparents by any means necessary. I wish we were more like them, hell.
I mean, our grandparents had a different kind of pastor. They had pastors that weren't scared to speak out. They had a different type of education. They understood at least more about their history than we do now. So they had a different perspective on everything. I mean, people nowadays, we talking about we going to boycott Black Friday. You going to boycott one fucking day? Shut your punk ass up. Shut up. The bus boycott lasted for over a year. These people made a commitment to walk to work, carpool, and do all these other things for over a year. Now, we can talk and analyze the negative impact or what they could have done better or all these other things all day, and that's the benefit of being in the situation we are 60 years later, is that we can analyze what they did and see the results. But that doesn't mean disrespect them. Like you said, Jamie, there is that a lot of people don't realize that prior to MLK meeting with, I forget their names, he was an advocate for guns. He looked at buying guns. The government wouldn't let him get a license to purchase a weapon. He had armed guards. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't like he was just running around. But, again, they give us the narrative when we in school, and that goes to a whole separate discussion about how you truly integrate. A lot of us still feel like integration is my black kid sitting next to your white kid. That is not integration. Integration is my black kid's ancestors being in the history books next to your white kid's ancestors. The kids don't have to share a classroom, but the curriculum needs to share perspective. But people don't, but again, motherfuckers, they just don't, they learn these fake-ass facts without ever questioning why would, and we know that white America as a collective, I'm not talking about the few individual pockets, we know white America as a collective doesn't like black people. Why would you trust that same society to teach you anything beneficial about yourself? This shit makes no sense. These are the same motherfuckers that will shoot you down in the streets as a police and then will take you in class and make you want to be a police officer.
And it's just, I encourage people, actually, instead of just co-signing because it sounds funny, you know, these hands, I get it, it sounds funny, actually understand that we, as a generation, we're not even half of what our grandparents went through, our great-grandparents. We're not even a fraction of that. Actually, because if some of these communities, George Zimmerman went outside if we were our grandparents, thinking he could go run down on a kid buying some damn Skittles from the store. He would have probably got hemmed up before he even got to that kid. So, yeah, we are not our grandparents. You're not going to give anybody those hands. You're going to sit your ass down, and you're going to share, and you're going to like, you're going to heart, you're going to laugh at somebody's goddamn status. That's all your generation is going to do, which is sad. So we need to be more like our grandparents. How about that?
Hey, I'm a bomb, Joe. Look at here. All you young fucks, you young Thundercats, all these people out here, you need to get your mind right. And just understand, right? We're gonna drop another one for y'all laugh, cause y'all don't get it. Y'all don't like. It's totally just. I'm talking about. You better watch your step. You better watch your step, cause these bombs just dropping everywhere on y'all ass. So you better duck, right? Because I mean, but look. Stop being disrespectful. Know your history. Understand what's going on. Understand your situation. We're literally not fighting back. We've literally chosen to not fight back. We've chosen to not defend ourselves. And yes, some of this stuff have been passed down maybe from some grandparents and some parents, but it's not all across the board. But stop going around talking about, like, our generation is much stronger. Our generation haven't endured half the stuff our older generation, especially our grandparents. You got to remember, our grandparents are like a generation and a half out of slavery. Y'all got to remember that. So you don't have half of the heart, half of the courage, half of the moxie that your grandparents had. You don't have the heart to stand up to a mob of white people. You don't have the heart to do that. We're just fucking talking behind our phones and our keyboards, and you need to stop doing that, because you ain't got no hands, and you ain't got no guns, and if it come to armed conflict, we ain't organizing nothing, and we'll get our ass whooped. Yeah. You see it every time when people go out in these called themselves rioting, and the police getting that line, when the police getting that straight line across the street, it's over.
Yep.
It's over.
Yep. Saw that here in Charlotte. When the police lined up, everybody calmed down. They calmed down quickly. Not that they was all ramped up anyways, but, I mean, it is what it is. To be honest, do I agree with the nonviolent stance? No, of course I don't. I'm self-defense all day. Malcolm X is my idol. But at the same time, I understand the strength it takes to get hit with a rock and not run over there and pop somebody in the face. Like, that is a level of strength that needs to be respected. Now, whether or not we agree with it is a whole nother discussion, but you get punched in the face and then not do nothing. That takes strength. And I know we don't like to respect that kind of strength, but that does take a level of strength. That's why I respect Dr. King, because it takes strength not to want to meet violence or physical violence with physical violence. It's natural. It's easy when somebody hits you to hit them back. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. That's easier than breathing. if somebody walk up and punch you in the face with all they might, the easiest thing in the world to do at that point is punch them back. The most difficult thing in the world to do at that point is not to punch them back. Now, we could debate all day about the benefits of not punching them back versus the benefits of punching them back, but that doesn't negate the strength that it takes to do that. And I know some of y'all are going to listen to this and be butt hurt because we was calling you punk asses. But honestly, that's the language that I see and that I hear from a lot of y'all talking about our elders. So if you want to sit back and call my grandparents punk asses because you believe a narrative that's false as fuck, that's half true, then I'm going to call you a punk ass. And if you get sensitive about it, then maybe you should think about that next time you use it.
Now, your ass, you can get mad if you want to, but you're choosing to get your history lesson from a meme.
Exactly. But you gotta understand, memes are, people are so dumb. We get political information from memes. We get everything from a damn meme, but we get nothing from a book. It's so many memes that are circulating right now that are just inaccurate, you name it, especially when it comes to, like, the damn hands thing, that's just inaccurate and inaccurate. Just completely inaccurate, and we just roll with it because it's funny, it's on Facebook, and we just assume it to be true. Be smart, people. Stop being a asshole, or Joe's going to drop a bomb on you.
Hey, man, don't make me do it. Because you think that the bombs ain't really dropping when you expect them to drop? That's what we do to you, right? We hit you with that. We
I'm
hit you with that.
Like, you did trying to fuck me up, man. I was like, drop a ball. You was just like, fall. Yeah, you got to have an app open, man. Like, yo, hey, Pat, man, commandeer the bombs from Joe, man. Joe over there.
See, you don't understand.
Eggnog.
See, there you go.
There you go. Oh, 8 minutes later. Yeah. Like,
see,
on,
you
man.
Don't understand. You don't understand how these bombs work, okay? These are secret bombs, okay? The bomb don't explode when you're ready for it to explode. That's how your enemy stay on top of what you're doing.
All right, man. Joe can go to him with these damn firecrackers he dropping. But the point's all the same. Know your damn history. Know your grandparents want some damn pushovers. Stop being fucking idiots.
There you go.
There we go. That's thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that one. That was somewhat on time.
Hey, man, look here. Ja Rule say, I'm not always there when you call, but I'm always on time.
What? Wait a minute.
This dude. Oh, man.
Hey, man, you got to work Ja Rule in your conversation somewhere, man.
And one more thing with these memes. Stop sharing this goddamn potatoes, green. That shit is corny as fuck, man. Stop.
It's
that shit's so lame. I got beans, green. Shut the fuck up, man. I'm so tired of hearing that shit. And it's not even funny, really. It's just like everybody's going. Then the Holy Rollers came out. I was like, oh, y'all don't even know where that's from. That's from the Shirley. Man, nobody gives a shit who it's from. The shit's corny. Stop that shit. Stop being corny this Thanksgiving. Just eat your goddamn food. And have some crown. Shut the fuck up.
Right. Get on that crown. Hey, man, y'all know what it is. I'm Joseph Ward. He's Jamie Basham. And he's Patrick Irvin. And we are the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. As you know, our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our communities to help uplift and empower our community. We'll be back next week, so y'all make sure y'all stay tuned. We're going to finish going through our codes of conduct. Hey, for more information, about PAX Inc., because this is the PAX Inc. codes of conduct. So you can actually go to www.pactsinc and click on the codes of conduct tab and actually read through the codes of conduct for yourself. Also, visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain and subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. And with that being said, y'all know how
beans,
we do it.
Greens, potatoes, tomatoes, ham.
All that. Ham hocks, collard greens, neck
rats,
bones.
Rats, cats, dogs. Who the hell eats
shoulder,
rats, cats, and dogs?
Shoulder blades, all that, man. Y'all, we got it all. Hey, man, so y'all know how we do, man. Two fingers up like a player, man. We catch y'all next week. Peace.